أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. So we're back to our story, the story of Surah Yusuf. And the stage that we're in right now is this one. The prisoner has come to Yusuf and met him in the prison. He explained to him after missing him for 7 years, not seeing him, not speaking to him, not remembering him. Now that they had a problem, he remembered him and he came to him. And he came to him in a dire state of need. And he explained to them that there was a very strange dream that the monarch had seen. He saw that 7 fat cows were eaten by 7 lean ones, and he saw that there were 7 stalks and then 7 lean ones, some with green ears and 7 lean ones. So he asked him, what's the meaning of this? And Yusuf alayhi salam is now responding. And Yusuf alayhi salam, we see that he's responding without saying anything, without requesting anything, without holding him hostage. Immediately he starts to speak. So these are the words of Yusuf. قال تزرعون 7 سنين دأبا فما حصدتم فذروه في سنبله إلا قليلا مما تأكلون. You will sow for 7 consecutive years, then leave in the ear whatever grain you harvest except for a little that you eat. ثم يأتي من بعد ذلك 7 شداد يأكلن ما قدمتم لهن إلا قليلا مما تحسنون. Then after that will come 7 harsh years, which will eat up everything that you have set aside, whatever you have set aside for them, except a little which you preserve. ثم يأتي من بعد ذلك عام فيه يغاث الناس وفيه يعصرون. Then after that will come a year wherein the people will be granted relief and provided rains therein and pressed fruits in. We'll talk about, inshallah, each one of these verses and what they mean and what the possibilities are regarding their tafsir. So this is one of those areas where the biblical narration is mistaken and the Quranic narration is correct. In the biblical narration, first of all, if it was a pharaoh instead of a monarch, and then this conversation took place between the monarch and Yusuf alayhi salam. Whereas in our conversation, the prisoner has come to the prison, speaking to Yusuf in the prison, and he tells him what's happening. What happens is that the 7 years, the 7 fat cows, they represented 7 years of plenty, good times. The lean ones showed that there were going to be 7 years after that of drought. Now, when we look at the Arabic of the verse, they say, some of the Mufassirin say, that Yusuf alayhi salam in this brief statement is giving a command. He's not informing them of what's going to happen. He's not making a prophecy here. That Yusuf alayhi salam is not saying that there will come 7 years and those 7 years will be years where you have plenty. No, Yusuf alayhi salam is actually giving a command. And think about this. Yusuf alayhi salam in a prison, a prisoner, first time talking to the king, right? He's going to be speaking to the representative of the king. And then now he's telling the king how it is. What you're going to do is this. Okay? They have other examples in the Holy Quran. Let me demonstrate this a little bit. What does it mean when we have one sentence which is in the direct form of a command? The sentence says, you must do this. Another time when God, according to the understanding of some Mufassirin, will use a sentence to convey the same message. And what happens is that Mufassirin explain that sometimes this is even more emphasis. Let me give you an example and then we'll go to an ayat of Quran and then see what this understanding is. There's one time when you come to a person and you ask them, what should I do about a situation? And the person says, brother or sister, do this. That's a direct command. There's another time when the person informs you of something. what you're going to do is this. You will be doing such and such. That, when they say, is a sentence, a regular sentence that you and I would use, but it's now coming in the form of a command. And these experts in the language, these mufassirin, say that sometimes this is even more emphasis in it. So Yusuf alayhi salam speaking and telling these individuals, what you're going to do if you want to survive for these next 7 years is that you will do such and such. Let me give you a Quranic example and then the verse. So the Quranic example, this is from Surah 61 and it's verse number 11. A sentence as a command. تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ You believe in Allah وَرَسُولِهِ وَتُجَاهِدُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ بِأَمْوَالِكُمْ وَأَنفُسِكُمْ You believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You believe in His messenger. You do jihad in His way. فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ بِأَمْوَالِكُمْ With your wealth and with yourselves. So here, normally one will look at it and say, oh, this is a sentence. This is a sentence. But here, it's not a sentence, it's a command, and according to this understanding. You must do jihad fi sabilillah by using this sentence. So what Yusuf is saying over here is this. When he says in the beginning, tazra'un, right? That you will go over and you will plant, or you will sow consecutively for 7 years. What he's saying is a command. You must sow consecutively for 7 years. After that, save the food. Don't eat everything. The harsh times are coming. Okay, so not a prophecy, a command from Yusuf to these individuals. What happens next in the next verse? ثُمَّ يَأْتِ مِنْ بَعْدِ ذَلِكَ سَبْعٌ شِدَادٌ يَأْكُلْنَ مَا قَدَّمْتُمْ لَهُنَّ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا مِمَّا تُحْسِنُونَ What does this next sentence mean? They say when we look at the Arabic of the sentence, when the word comes to shiddad, right? So after that, after those 7 years will come 7 years which are shiddad. They say there's two possible meanings for the word shiddad here. It's a plural and it comes from the word shadid, but they say that there's two possible meanings for it. One of them is that it comes from the word shiddah, which means difficulty. So 7 difficult years are coming. 7 harsh years are coming. Shiddad. There's another possibility that Allah Tabatabai says is actually more closer to the truth. It doesn't come from shiddad in that meaning. It comes from shadda alayh, meaning karra, meaning attack. What does that mean? 7 years. Harsh years, 7 years which will attack you, give you difficulty. What he says is, the symbolism here is this. And he says this is actually the more correct understanding. In the beginning, the instructions of Yusuf, what were they? Yusuf said that 7 years are going to come. What you're going to do is you will raise these crops or you will sow continuously and you will put aside some wheat. Right? You'll leave something in the actual ear so that it doesn't rot for those 7 years. Okay? Then what happens? Then after that, he's comparing the next 7 years, the difficult years, to a ravenous beast, an animal that's attacking you. Then 7 years of difficulty, in this way though, 7 attacking animals. Animals are here to take advantage of you. These will be coming. And those animals, ya'kulna, these animals will eat مَا قَدَّمْتُمْ لَهُنَّ They will eat that which you prepared for them. You put away some food for those 7 years, preparing for these ravenous beasts which were going to come, and they were going to eat that food that you prepared for them, except for a little bit, إِلَّا قَلِيلًا مِمَّا تُحْسِنُونَ Except for a little bit that you've stored. They say that إِحْسَان here means Idkhar and ihraz, so to preserve. So the 7 ravenous years will come. Those animals will come. The difficulty will come. They will come, eat up whatever you stored, whatever you put aside for them, except for a little bit that you've preserved. Then what happens? Then after that, ثُمَّ يَأْتِ مِنْ بَعْدِ ذَلِكَ عَامٌ فِيهِ يُغَاثُ النَّاسِ وَفِيهِ يَعْصِرُونَ. They say there's two possible meanings for the word يُغَاثُ النَّاسِ. They say that either it came from غَوْث, from relief, right? Which means, or not, from غَوْث, which relief, so divine assistance. So these are years where the people are going to be receiving divine assistance. After that will come a year, after those seven harsh years, will come a year of divine assistance. God will send down that help, blessings from heaven. He'll remove the difficulty. Or the other possibility is this. It's from ghayth. It's rain. So after that will come a year of plenty, as in rain, and God will give you relief from those 7 years. There'll be rain, there'll be plenty. And after that, another word that's over here, it's mentioned, it's ya'asirun, right? They will squeeze or they will press. So what will they be squeezing or pressing? For instance, fruits, for instance, olives, oil, maybe animals getting milk. So what happens is, after those 7 years, the harsh 7 years will end, and then the good time will come. So the basic thing, what Yusuf alayhi salam has done, is just given them a 15-year plan. Prepare for the hard times. 7 years are coming. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. After those 7 years, I'm telling you what's going to happen. For 7 years, you'll take advantage of the good times. You will sow continuously, put aside food. What you're going to do in order to preserve the food for those 7 years is you leave it in the ears of the corn or the grain itself. That way it won't rot. After that, those 7 years will come. They'll be like ravenous animals. They'll take advantage of everything you had. But because you're prepared for them, you'll offer it. You'll ward off the beast with what you've prepared. What will come next will be the good times. So a 15-year plan. So wonderful. So now they know what the solution is. And again, it's something that Yusuf alayhi salam offered without any questions asked, without any demands, without asking for anything, without saying, well, you guys left me alone, without saying, take me to the king first, let me explain my situation, and then I'll give him the solution. None of that. Ikhlas. Ikhlas. God's work, let God's work be done. Let these people be saved. I have information that they need. Let me help Allah's creation. Right? The first reminder, brothers and sisters, that we want to get from this verse is a reminder about ikhlas in our actions. Ikhlas in our actions. Very important, brothers and sisters, for those like yourselves who want to do good work for the Imam of the time, who want to be those special servants of the Imam of the time. How much ikhlas do you and I have? And I start with myself as a reminder. How much ikhlas do I have in my actions? When the Imam's looking at our hearts, you and I, brothers and sisters, right now, in our presence here, and what we do in our social lives, whether we're dealing with family, friends, politics, how much ikhlas and sincerity and selflessness does God see in our actions? How much, when we're doing Islamic work, is it about our organizations and the name of our organization? If I'm, let's say in my family, when I do something, when I do my part in the relationship, how much am I doing what my responsibility is in the house only for the sake of God and not for the sake of the people, not for worldly results? And then there's higher levels of akhlas that inshallah we can get to, higher levels where I'm not even seeking Jannah, but rather Ridwanullah Akbar. There are higher levels of ikhlas also. Now those I can't discuss because, I mean, if I make it into paradise, I've done a big thing. I would love to be searching for and seeking for Ridwanullah, the pleasure of God. Inshallah, Allah grants that to all of us. But even if we can get to that first stage, that there is no worldly desire in the efforts that we make, even the Islamic efforts that we make, even when we're involved with organizations, how much of it is purely for God? Allah has some ahadith that are a little bit difficult. A little bit difficult. Let's listen to one hadith. This is hadith Qudsi, and it's from Imam As-Sadiq, right? Because all of us, you and I, we're looking for results for our actions. It wouldn't do us any good that we're mu'mineen. We've denied ourselves the good of this world, hoping and praying that God accepts our actions. And on the outward, it seems like a lot of good actions. But then God, when He looks in our hearts, He doesn't see ikhlas in our actions and He rejects. Okay? So let's listen to the hadith, hadith Qudsi. What does Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala say? He says, Ana khayru sharik. God says, I am the best partner. This is a scary one though. I am the best partner. Ana khayru sharik. Faman amila li wa li ghayri. So whoever does some good in action, piety, taqwa, in action for me and other than me. Man amila li wa li ghayri. Fahuwa liman amilahu ghayri. If that's the case, I give whatever you've done, whatever we've done, if it's a little bit of less than God in it, I give it to the other person. Brothers and sisters, ikhlas in our actions, in everything that we do, not only in our prayers, which we're doing qurbatan Allah, but even in our social interactions. If a little bit there's nafs in it, a little bit looking for name and fame. Let me give you an example. Sometimes this happens in Muslim organizations even. In work that we want to do for the name of, in the name of God, in the name of religion. Once Bahlul was watching some individual, and he's making a masjid. So Bahlul came over to him. He said, who's this masjid for? He said, of course, the masjid for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He says, is that the case? Let me put my name on the masjid, Bahlul's mosque. And the guy said, no, why should, my name should be on it. I should be, I'm doing all of this effort. Lack of ikhlas. I want my name to be on it. I'm doing Islamic work, but I want there to be somewhere, some notification, some people know who's making all this effort. I want everybody to know, everybody to recognize. Outwardly, very much Allah, ikhlas, Islam. Inwardly, what is it? Is it really ikhlas? Does it matter when I'm doing Islamic work? Does it matter if somebody else takes credit? Somebody else's name is on it. Does it matter to me? Will I still do the work? Somebody else is going to get credit. They're going to benefit. People will know them. They're the mu'mineen who did such and such. Do I still participate with the same amount of ikhlas and with Bahlul and this other guy? If you're doing it for God, God knows. If it's done for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, whoever's name is there, does it matter? God knows. If it's for Him, it shouldn't matter. The guy, when he heard Bahlul say that, he said, look, whatever name you want to put on it, Bahlul's mask, somebody else's mask. He realizes there's no ikhlas there. They said that eventually Bahlul ended up putting an ayat of Quran on it. Right? But the idea of, from a practical point of view, is sometimes the reason that I won't cooperate with others, can't work with others, can't do projects with others. Part of it is sometimes that we have a difference of opinion. Part of it sometimes maybe I want credit. I want my name to be there. Let me give you an example from some of the shuhada, the ikhlas that they had. There was a shaheed and his name was Ismail Daqaiqi, Ismail. So what happened is that the brothers noticed, they said that when we would come into our bunkers at night, we would see that our boots had been waxed. Ismail Daqaiqi is the commander of the entire base. We would come into our bunkers at night and we see that somebody has come in the night and is waxing the boots of the other mu'mineen. And nobody knows who this is. Ikhlas. Middle of the... Let no one know. The more I can do work for Islam and nobody know that I've done anything. I'm an unknown soldier of the Imam of my time. I'm not on the front, I'm not in the, right? But God knows. That's what's important. They said, later we checked, we find out after checking, it's our commander. Ikhlas. So Yusuf alayhi salam, doing his actions, they need help, they need assistance. I'm not calling for my name and fame and release, and now I've got you over a barrel. I won't do it until you release me from prison. Ikhlas, let God's work be done. First reminder. The second reminder again is about ikhlas. Ikhlas that we get from these teachings of Quran and Sunnah. Right? I want to ask a question though. Why is it that you think that there is so much emphasis on butchering Shias right now? Shias of Amirul Mu'mineen. Why is there so much emphasis everywhere you go that people want to make effort? The Shias, for instance, they're coming out for the Day of Quds. Coming out for the Day of Quds. And they will make effort to send suicide bombers and kill Mu'mineen and the Day of Quds. Massacres, killings. Why is it that that would be there? Everything, if you notice, pushing us to, they would like to us to hate our Sunni brothers. Why is it that even some of our Shia shuyukh get security from the governments that, in which those places that they reside, security? And they go over and they say very rough things about Ahlus Sunnah. Insulting and brave and strong. And why is it that they would get that support? What's happening? One of the efforts that's being made is an area of us hating one another and in particular not supporting the issue of Palestine. Becoming enemies with one another. That for a Shia, you're like, well, how much? How many butchering? How many killing? I don't know if some of you have seen the pictures that come out of Pakistan. And those innocent people. And they film these things. So from one side, you hear the call of the leader, unity, these things. And then you watch these kind of massacres and killings. And then you say, come out, for instance, for a Quds Day rally. Let me hear you a story of Ahlul Bayt. Okay? Very beautiful, actually. Very beautiful story of Ahlul Bayt. Surah 76, and it's verse number 8. Okay? وَيُطْعِمُونَ الطَّعَامَ عَلَىٰ حُبِّهِ مِسْكِينًا وَيَتِيمًا وَأَسِيرًا. Talking about Ahlul Bayt. That at that time, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, they had become sick. They'd become sick, and then they go to Amirul Mu'mineen talks to the Prophet. He says that I advise you, why don't you make another? Why don't you make a promise to God that if he provides shifa for these two young men, these two boys, if he provides shifa for them, you make another, you're going to fast for 3 days. And they do that. They make that another, and Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein become better, and the family starts to fast. They don't have much money, by the way. They don't have a lot of food, by the way. They're fasting, and on the first day, after completing the fast, then someone comes knocking at the door. Miskeen. I'm one of the miskeen. You please offer me your food. So we fasted all day, including Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein. We fasted all day, and then now these people come to the door, a poor person comes to the door, and the Ahlul Bayt, ala hubbihi. This is another thing we find in the verse. Ala hubbi, what does that mean? That it wasn't the case that the Ahlul Bayt didn't need food, weren't hungry. No, they did need that. They're human beings like you and I. And still, with that need, they prefer others over themselves. And they go and they give them that food. The next day, what happens? Yatim. An orphan comes. Orphan comes. So now we fasted an entire day without food. We break our fast with water. The orphan comes, and then now we offer the food to the orphan. Third day, what happens? Third day, asir, a prisoner comes. I'm in need, and Ahlul Bayt prefer themselves. Even when we look in the Sunni ahadith regarding this issue, they say that this took place, not only that after it took place, that Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, so hungry after this, when they see the Prophet basically distressed by seeing them in this situation. They're human beings, they haven't eaten. Ikhlas. Now, okay, so ikhlas, let me read that. So first of all, that much ikhlas that I go over and I do this. Let me read you the next line and you see how hard. When I've tried to say, okay, well look, let me act on this verse, the next verse that I'm about to say. So what's the first verse? وَيُطْعِمُونَ الطَّعَامِ. So they give food, عَلَى حُبِّهِ. Although they need this food, مِسْكِينًا وَيَتِيمًا وَأَسِيرًا. Okay? Then what happens? Words of Ahlul Bayt now. The efforts, meaning this is their state. إِنَّمَا نُطْعِمُكُمْ لِوَجْهِ اللَّهِ. The only reason that we feed you, that we give you this food, is لِوَجْهِ اللَّهِ. It's only for God. لَا نُرِيدُ مِنْكُمْ جَزَاءً وَلَا شُكُورًا. We don't want any reward from you. We don't even want thanks. I don't know, brothers and sisters, if you've ever tried to do this. When you do someone a favor, seriously, take Ahlul Bayt as example. I do you a favor. I do an act of kindness with my husband, with my wife, with my children, with others, mu'mineen, non-mu'mineen, a nice person at work, whoever. I try and do this, and I don't want from you, not jaza, not even thanks. Very high level of ikhlas. Brothers and sisters, it's our responsibility, we're bringing it back to the modern age now, it's our responsibilities as Shia of Amirul Mu'mineen to defend Quds. La nurid, not jaza and not shukura. Who cares? People appreciate, don't appreciate. This person didn't appreciate. What's my responsibility and our responsibility as mu'mineen, as followers of Ahlul Bayt, is to defend the holy lands. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Another understanding or another reminder that we get from these verses of the Holy Quran, when Yusuf alayhi salam speaks and says, Tazra'una sab'a sinin da'aba. Then Yusuf is speaking and he says that for 7 years you're going to sow continuously, right? Except for فَمَا حَسَدْتُمْ فَذَرُوهُ فِي سُنْبُلِهِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا مِمَّا تَأْكُلُونَ. Whatever you sow, whatever you finish, you reap, you take that and you just leave a little bit with the grain still in the ear. There is no conflict, brothers and sisters, there is no conflict between the idea of tawakkul and the reliance on God and doing our responsibility. Planning, being careful, there's no conflict between the two. That Yusuf alayhi salam is at that highest stage of tawakkul and reliance on God, and at the same time he comes up with a 15-year plan for what is to be done. No conflict between the two. Now, he's giving the leadership of Egypt instructions, a 15-year plan on how to make it out of a crisis situation with trust in God. Part of the reason that sometimes mu'mineen, mu'minat face problems is there are some things which should not be left to the mashiatillah, for instance, whatever God wants. Sometimes in some areas, mu'mineen, mu'minat are people who don't do their part. They don't do their planning. They don't do their responsibility. They want to leave everything on God. Let me quote you a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen. It's been attributed to Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says, "Ihdhar kull al-hadar." He says, so beware and take full precaution. I'll read you the English. Lest shaitan fool you by presenting to you weakness in the form of tawakkul, in the form of trusting in Allah, and cause you to suffer humiliation by blaming things on divine decree. Instead of me saying, why wasn't I successful in this issue? Why didn't I pass my exam? Why didn't I get this job? Why didn't I complete? God didn't want it to happen. Allah didn't want it. If He wanted it to happen, it would have happened. Amir al-Mu'mineen saying, sometimes weakness is presented to us in the form of tawakkul. Not doing my responsibility, I think that that's tawakkul. Whereas we learn from Yusuf alayhi salam, there's no conflict between that tawakkul and at the same time doing what my responsibility is. This is what Amir al-Mu'mineen says in this statement which has been attributed to him. فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ أَمَرَ بِالتَّوَكُّلِ. God has commanded you to do tawakkul عند انقطاع الحيال. After you've made every effort and tried every route. والتسليم للقضاء بعد الإعذار. After you've made like tremendous effort and you worked, after that you submit to whatever the qadha of Allah is and the decree of Allah is. And God says to you, فَقَالْ خُذُوا حِذْرَكُمْ. God tells you in the Qur'an, the same Qur'an that's calling you to tawakkul and reliance on God, God says to you in the Qur'an, take precaution. خُذُوا حِذْرَكُمْ وَلَا تُلْقُوا بِأَيْدِيكُمْ إِلَى التَّهْلُكَةِ. Don't throw yourself into destruction. You want to get into a business, you want to start a business. Tawakkul ala Allah. Okay, well first, do my research, backgrounds, checks. Has this partner, I want to take this person as a business partner. Have they worked with other people? Have they produced? Have they kept up their end? I want to get married. Does this person have those attributes Ahlul Bayt said? It comes to work, right? Whatever it is that I'm trying to do in life, that I'm doing my responsibility. He continues, he says, وَقَالَ النَّبِي صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهُ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمَ اللَّهُمَّ صَلِّ عَلَى مُحَمَّدْ وَعَلَى مُحَمَّدْ. اِعْقِلْهَا وَتَوَكُّلْ. So the Prophet told you that try or tie it and trust in God. So our responsibility, doing our responsibility, has no conflict with tawakkul, the same way that Yusuf alayhi salam, there was no conflict between what he did and that high state of tawakkul. Last lesson that we get from these verses tonight. Last reminder that we get from these verses tonight. One of the things that we're supposed to have as mu'mineen are excellent planning skills. Yusuf alayhi salam is someone who's presented with a problem. He doesn't just complain. Some people when they're hit, when they come up with social issues, problems, right? It's easy to complain. This is wrong. That's wrong. Offer me some solutions. Why don't you tell me, okay, this is a problem. This is an issue. What are some ways of getting out of this issue? Don't just complain. Yusuf alayhi salam comes up with a plan. Right? He's an excellent administrator. Give me an opportunity, I'll take you out of these 7 years of difficulty. I'll give you a 15-year plan, and you go over and you just tell me what the dream is, I give you this 15-year plan. One of the things that we're supposed to have, brothers and sisters, as mu'mineen, are these excellent planning skills. Let's say I'm given a budget, and my budget is limited. I'm not going to have all of the money in the world. Can I survive on a budget? A husband and wife, right? Let's say they say that we're going to live on one budget. Can we take less amount of money and live with that and work with that? If I've given a budget for a project, right? There's some people who have the same amount or less than we have and live their lives comfortably. There's some people, no matter how much resources they have, they waste them. I remember in the Hausa, as a young man going to the Hausa, there were some of the students who had less, they were less well off financially than others. Some of them they had support from back home or they came with money, and every month they would start out with more. You would see these brothers who started out with more in the beginning of the month, in the end of the month, they're borrowing from the brother who's less financially capable. That brother had what we had, we call tadbir. He could budget, he'd plan, how much do I need, how much do I need to spend, live within my means. And having these excellent skills, these survival skills, is actually something that the mu'min wants to have. We have hadith now. This one is from, so we see the example of Hazrat Yusuf and how he was able to do it. Now let's look at the words of Imam al-Baqir. He says, من علامات المؤمن ثلاث. There are three things that are among the signs of a true mu'min. من علامات المسلم, مؤمن ثلاث. He says, حُسْنُ التَّقْدِيرِ فِي الْمَعِيشَةِ. One of the things that a mu'min is supposed to have, mu'min are supposed to have, are these excellent planning skills. I can budget, I can live, I can come up with a plan, an issue, how will we live, how will we survive. Having this trait, we learn from ahadith, is even more important than having a lot of wealth. Being able to budget, live within my means, come up with a plan, how much do we spend, how much do we save? Where do we spend? What's necessary now? What can I wait for? What can I save for? They say that Japanese, I remember hearing this before, they were saying the Japanese would spend or save 30% of their income, and Americans would spend 30% more than they earn. A lot of people on credit cards, borrowing. Sometimes what happens, even when you and I, our forefathers, they came to these lands, sometimes when they came to these lands, they really had to pinch and save in order to make money, make halal income, and give it to us. Sometimes those of us who've grown up here, the West has been able to penetrate our minds and get us to live on more than what we have. I want it. I take out my credit card. I buy it. I willingly take on loans. Right? Whereas we have an hadith of Ahlul Bayt that loans are something that it causes you worry at night. The mu'min wants to avoid those things if he can. Instead of having this instant gratification, whenever I buy something, I take out my credit card and I purchase it immediately. No, maybe I see it, I like it, I say, not now, later. I train myself to be not an instant satisfaction, instant gratification junkie. I see it, I must have it right now. No, maybe I see it, oh, inshallah, very good. Sometimes I have a product, it's still good. They want to make us monkey see, monkey do. We've come up with the new iPad, the new cell phone, the latest this. Oh, but it's the latest. The old one you had, that's still good. I can't have that now. Everybody would see the latest iPad. Huh? Latest. Whereas if the mu'min can be someone who says, I live within my budget. Right? So the hadith says, it says, even more than having wealth is having this trait. Let's look at the hadith. This is from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He says, "Husnu tadbir ma'al kafaf akfa laka min al-kathir ma'al israf." He says, if you have these excellent planning skills, tadbir, you can plan, you live within your budget, He says, having excellent planning skills with contentment will provide you of your needs better than having a lot of wealth and being extravagant. A lot of the problems that people have, even young people who are starting off in their lives, is because of israf. We want to be point blank about it. Israf, not living within my means. I've got to have the latest this, keep up with the Joneses, appearances. Those are things which can do mu'mineen in. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that He make you and I amongst the true soldiers of Imam al-Mahdi. We ask Allah for the tawfiq to understand the religion in a comprehensive fashion and then to practice it. We ask Allah to protect mu'mineen, mu'minat, all of the maraji, and especially the leader. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.